Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined on the phone by Joe Masato after the Thunder's 120-100 win at Sacramento. Joe, this was really one of the few games where the result was kind of decided well before even the fourth quarter.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, it was really those middle quarters. The Thunder had 36 in the second, 37 in the third. And this podcast has already gone on too long without me mentioning Lu Dort. Holy cow. It was the Lu Dort show.
It sure was. No, he was fantastic. I mean, and when he had his career high of 10, we were talking about, oh, if he keeps this up offensively, he's going to be making a case for himself in the rotation and this, that, and the other. He doubled that and more with 23 points tonight and shot 5 of 6 from three. Really an incredibly efficient shooting night for him.
Yeah, and I mean, so he had some big scoring games in the G League, totally different competition. He had, I think, 9 20-point games at Arizona State. He only spent one season there, his freshman season. He only had 4 of 23 or more, and those came against Nevada, Utah State, McNeese State, and Cal State Fullerton. And I read those off because it's not even Pac-12 competition, so he did it against, you know, Nevada's good, but they're not the Sacramento Kings, is all I'm trying to say here. Like, this is,
it's not an NBA team.
It's seemingly coming out of nowhere. Like, we've talked about his story. He's a rookie. He went undrafted. He's a two-way player, and you know, without Terrence Ferguson wasn't going through a long absence right now due to personal reasons, I think Lu Dort would be playing, but he certainly wouldn't be playing these kind of minutes.
No.
And like, that has allowed for his emergence.
Well, and you even wonder how much, I mean, if he would be playing this much, because without that absence, there's not a place where you'd be like, oh yeah, it makes sense to plug in Lu Dort here. And so I don't know that he would have had a chance to really get into an offensive groove like he has with this team. Because he's gone through some growing pains with especially his three-point shooting, where at the beginning of the season he was really struggling. He was shooting like 18% in first handful of games. And granted, that's a very small sample size and he's going to regress to the mean, but he looks so confident with those open catch and shoot threes, which, like, yes, that's one of the easiest three-point shots in basketball, but to knock them down consistently is definitely still a skill. Like, it's still not a close shot. And Lu Dort is not the kind of guy who's going to be drawing a lot of attention from defenses. And so if you can have your point guards driving and kicking out to him, he's going to get open shots. And so then all you want him to do is knock him down. And honestly, at this point, you don't want him taking contested threes because we've seen how his averages very quickly drop when he's doing that. It's all about decision making for him and a lot of young players.
Exactly. So his 5 threes tonight, they all came on. They were all from assists. So like, he's not creating those type of shots on his own. Like you said, it's just catch and shoot. Coming into tonight, he was shooting 24% from three-point range. Again, very small sample. Such a small sample that after tonight, that has jumped all the way to 34%. his three-point percentage has increased by 10%.
Oh my gosh.
In one night. And I think, you know, for a guy like him who, like, Thunder fans do not get used to Lu Dort shooting 5 of 6 from three. I think this is a total anomaly. But if he can shoot, league average is like 35.5%. He's at 34% now. If he can hover in the 30s as a rookie, I think
it's... And play defense as well as he has.
Yeah, I think they'll take that any day. And then he works on his shooting in the offseason. He gets better and, you know, can become at least a consistent league average shooter. I think they'll take that any day. And also, it wasn't just I thought he showed progression from like the first half to the second half in this one. The first half, every time he got the ball, he either shot or dribble drive to the basket. And he finished a lot of those. Like, he was very good off the dribble tonight. But in the second half, I thought he took some time. He like was more of a playmaker. He didn't have any assists, but he was looking for the extra pass. Like, Billy Donovan talked about it post game that he found Gallinari for a couple. They just didn't go in. So he doesn't have that like playmaking ability right now. Like, it's either, if you get it, you either drive to the basket or you shoot it. Like, those are his two primary options right now. But like, he's still feeling out the rest of the game.
Yeah. Well, to me, one of the most impressive moments was he had made a bunch of threes. And so he got a pass near the perimeter and stepped back behind it. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's about to take a contested step back three. Like, that's a terrible idea. And then instead he drew the foul, which was, like, as we're talking about decision making, perfect decision in that situation.
That was a very surprising play. I forgot about that until just now. I was like, what is he doing? And then it kind of looked like the rip move, but it was really just like a shot fake. So yeah, he's trying out some new things.
Yeah. Good job, Lou Dort.
I think it is interesting, though, what we talked about in the beginning of his playing time. So I think you could make the case if Terrence was available, he would be starting. And then you've got, you know, Hamidou Diallo playing those backup minutes off the bench. Now you've got Abdul Nader back. And because Lou's on the two-way contract, you wonder, like, would he even be up with the team right now? Like,
right.
It's the, and keep in mind, the Thunder has that extra roster spot open. They've got 14 guys on the roster, leaves room for one. And we don't know where his counter is at as far as the days, but you've got to be thinking he's surely increasing his chances of being signed to a full deal.
Yeah. Cause at this point, it seems like your depth chart is Terrence, Lou, Hami, Abdul.
I think that's right.
So, I mean,
that's the order. You're going like in order.
Yes. In order from one to however
most minutes to fewest. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that's where it is. Kind of an untimely injury for Abdul because he was shooting the ball really well before he got hurt.
He played good minutes because of injuries, but then even after those guys came back, he was still playing minutes in the rotation and, you know, getting some of those minutes off the bench along with Hami, and then the injury, and it's like, oh my gosh, and now Lou's playing so well, he kind of just got bumped. He's a different, what helps him is he is a different type of wing. Like, he's can be a spot up 3-point shooter, which the other guys are more defensive minded. So you can definitely still see situations where the Thunder would want more shooting and might want to put Abdul in there instead of the other guys. But I mean, they also, yeah, it's a balance, and some other things will have to happen for him to work back into really consistent minutes again.
Yeah, I think of those four, I agree with the order, but I think Hamidou Diallo could be like the odd man out in that group, not as far as like going anywhere, but as far as minutes, because I think he probably has more athleticism than just about any of them. I mean, he won the slam dunk contest, but like Lou, just by sheer volume of shots he's putting up, like, he already seems to be ahead of him offensively from a 3-point standpoint, which a lot of that position, the way the Thunder uses it, they're just standing behind the 3-point line while the other guards drive and kick. And then from a defensive standpoint, I think he's clearly ahead of Diallo because he's starting and Diallo is not. So,
Yes. Well, well put. Very succinct and too direct. No, I agree with that. And you heard Chris Paul say how much of a jump, because Lu Dort played a lot of minutes with the Thunder on that road trip when they had a bunch of injuries, and then he kind of went disappeared with the Blue for a while, and now he's come back again due to a bunch of injuries. But Chris Paul talked about how much that time with the Blue, how much he's seen Lu's confidence change.
Chris Paul gets the quote of the night.
Yes.
Again, we were not there, but we listened on the post-game broadcast, and Chris Paul, who clearly, you could just tell, like, he was not himself after the game when he was talking, and clearly still mourning the loss of Kobe Bryant. But he
this was his first game back since Kobe's death, and he posted a Instagram with a bunch of pictures of him and Kobe, but also of Kobe and Chris's son, Chris Jr., and little Chris and Gianna, who also died in the helicopter crash. So it was very sweet and very moving post.
Yeah, also very sweet that he made the joke that they had already prearranged their marriage between Chris Jr. and Gianna. So,
who are like 3 years, they're separated by about 3 years. Gianna was 13 and Chris Jr. I believe is 10.
Yeah, but after the game, Chris sort of allowed for some humor and said that Kobe, he told Lou toward the end of the game that Kobe would have been proud of him because he had 23 points and zero assists. So I thought that was very funny.
It was. And it was, I mean, TNT had a fantastic tribute to Kobe. I believe it was last night with a bunch of guys who had played with him. And against him and all that. And there was a moment when they stopped to recognize the fact that they had just been laughing over memories and smiling. And I think it was Derek Fisher who said that it was the first time that he had, you know, laughed since the tragedy. So it was another moment like that where it was nice to see. I mean, obviously Chris is hurting, but it was nice to see him have a moment where a memory brought a smile to his face.
Yeah. And, you know, Chris said, he also said that it was just therapeutic for him to be back out there with his teammates tonight. And he didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but he played. I mean, just his presence out there, you could tell he had 9 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. So did a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, 3 of 12 shooting, but like you can't expect, I don't think anyone was upset with that performance. And he
didn't need to shoot the ball much better. He just, he seemed content being a distributor tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's 10 assists in only 26 minutes.
Yeah. The Thunder tied its season high tonight of 32 assists. So Chris had 10, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had 7, and Dennis Schroeder had 9. He had 24 and 9 tonight.
Yeah, leading the team in points and then very close on assists. And a lot of that was, I mean, part of that is because the Thunder was shooting the ball so well. They had a slow start, but the Kings had a much worse start shooting, and they held the Kings to 16 points in the first quarter and like 20 something percent shooting from the field, not from three.
That did that first quarter not take like an hour and
it
a
took
half
so long.
I was like, what is going on here? There were so many timeouts, there were so many stoppages, neither team was shooting the ball well, and it's like, oh my gosh, what is this?
No, it dragged on, and I definitely had a moment during the break where I like was like, okay, halftime, nope, not halftime. So Thunder shot fine. I think it was like 40% or something from the field, and then towards the end of the second quarter, it was like the last 7 minutes of the second quarter, they only missed 2 shots, one of which was a heave at the buzzer, so that doesn't really count. So went on this big run. A Dennis Schroeder three gave him a 16-point lead, which at the time was their biggest lead of the game, and like definitely wasn't for the rest of the game because they kept expanding out that lead. But that was where their offense really got started, and then they were just dominant again in the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, they were picking apart the Kings' defense, and it started with those three point guards just distributing the ball, shooting it well. I mean, Shea got off to a little bit of a slow start, but then he started to make some shots. Gallinari was 4 of 9 from three. Dennis Schroeder was 3 of 5. This was like another Dennis Schroeder night where had like Lou Dort not gone off, like I was planning to write about Dennis Schroeder. And it's just like, we say that so many times because yeah. He keeps like doing his thing. And then there was this like another performance that stands out even more, but like Dennis is just so solid.
Yeah. And so often it's not necessarily because it was a better performance than Dennis. It was just like a more surprising, really good performance.
Totally. Just unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Lou Dort is incredible rookie performance, more efficient than Schroeder, but Schroeder had his hands all over so many more plays.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, 24 and 9 is a sixth man. He actually played second most minutes tonight. Shea played 39 minutes. That's crazy. But yeah, I mean, he got a lot of time out there and continues to beef up those stats for his sixth man candidacy, which he has said over and over that he doesn't consider himself a sixth man, but I don't think the voters will care about that. I think they'll still vote for him.
I mean, there was some debate over Rookie of the Year the other year, and that seemed much more debatable than whether or not Schroeder is a sixth man.
Yeah, he has disqualified himself by saying he is not a sixth man.
Let's see. So Schroeder has led the reserves now in 43 of 46 and led all scorers in 18 games.
Wow. He's getting close to becoming their leading scorer.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is after tonight, but it was close already.
And Shea hasn't been shooting as well lately.
Coming into tonight, Shea was averaging 19.6, Gallinari 19 even, and then Dennis Schroeder 18.9. So he was 0.7 points per game behind Shea going into tonight. That he's not going to overcome it now, but like he's getting pretty close.
Yeah, and obviously
also that's very balanced scoring at the top, because then right below them you have Chris Paul at 17.2. So you have four guys averaging between 17.2 and 19.6.
That's wild, and I mean says a lot about the way that the Thunder plays.
Yeah. I mean every night it's like pretty even.
Yeah, I know. Tonight, I think it was only like five guys in double digits, and it's like, oh, that's not notable.
Only five.
Oh, wait. Nope, there's seven again. Never mind, there's seven again.
I mean, is that even notable? It seems like they're always seven.
I lied. Sorry, I was looking at plus minus for a second. I was right the first time. Only five.
Only five.
They've had seven.
Just one
they
of
had
those seven, games you like, gotta throw away.
Right. Just flush it. Yeah, they had seven two nights in a row. So five is like very much not a notable stat.
Oh. Yeah, we shouldn't even be discussing
it. Oh, God. Why? I'm so embarrassed. Why do we even say anything? Yeah. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, another very impressive night from Dennis Schroeder. 8 of 13, 3 of 5. He shot well from 3 too.
Yeah, I mean 15 of 34 overall from 3. 15 threes. Just looked it up. It was tied for the fifth most this season. I think 18 is their high in a game. So just overall, those offensive numbers were well up, thanks in part to just how good they were toward the end of that second quarter and in the third quarter.
Yeah, and a lot of those are, I mean, we talked about it with Lu Dort, but like a lot of the others, even from the point guards, are catch and shoots. You know, they're coming mm-hmm. off of assists. That's why you're getting such high assist numbers, but also why guys are so open when they're shooting, because I think we've talked about this with the three-point guard lineup, and even from the beginning when we were all kind of skeptical of it and the Thunder had their talking points about it, they kept saying it's hard when you have so many playmakers, you know, everyone, they're drawing so much attention, this, that, and the other, but that's really become true. Like, if you have Chris driving and Dennis on the perimeter, and he can just kick out to him, and Dennis is shooting the three like he has been, and a team is trying to both defend a possible elbow jumper from Chris and a three from Dennis slash a drive from Dennis, that's tough.
That's tough, as Dennis would say.
That's tough.
Very they had like so. We've talked about like the number one lineup in the league, minimum of 100 minutes. That was a couple weeks ago. I don't know what it is now, but it was the three-point guards with Gallinari and Adams. They closed the first half with that same lineup, but Noel in there instead of Adams. And it was a really good lineup. Like, you had Nerlens catching more lobs tonight. And it was a very athletic lineup, and I think you'll probably see more of that. Like, anytime those three guards are out there, especially with like a shooter like Gallo and a rim runner like Noel or Steven Adams, like, it's just so tough to defend.
Absolutely. And Nerlens has come in and played so, I think we talked a little bit about this on the last podcast, but he doesn't seem to be timid at all and is just running in there, like, trying to draw offensive fouls, and
he's not worried about his face.
He seems not at all worried about his face. And I tweeted something about it, just like about how he hasn't missed a step. And lots of people were, I think someone said something about like not running with his face or something. It's like, that's not what I was worried about. I wasn't worried about his like actual, like his face being held together. They wouldn't put him out there if it was going to just like jostle apart.
It's going to fall apart.
The thing that you worry about with an injury like that is more the side where, because you just went through something and you have a weird mask on your face, it's just getting used to that and making sure that you don't lose any of the aggressiveness that you had pre-injury, because you're worried about getting smashed in the face. And he seems not at all worried.
Yeah, and it's clearly like annoying, because he's can just see him readjusted all the time, like at every dead ball. And I mean, he was 6 of 7 tonight, caught a few more of those lobs. He's been very steady. But yeah, I'm also surprised with how, like, he's just right back in there, like just a couple days after this surgery for a broken face, basically, and is just doing his normal thing.
Yeah. So Thunder off to a good start for this 2-game road trip, and then they finally get a break, a very long break. But the second game is at, well, Lu Dort gets to go back to his college town-ish.
Yeah.
Wait.
Close enough.
Yeah. Scottsdale, right? Scottsdale, right?
Tempe.
Oh, you're right.
Phoenix. But it's like, I think it's like 30 minutes or something like that. It's fairly close. Maybe I'm off on my Arizona geography.
No, yeah, it definitely is.
Backtracking.
It definitely is close. I've played softball games in and around Phoenix and Tempe. And
okay.
Okay, yes. And then Arizona is in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's in Tucson, but
gosh,
but
darn it.
Okay. He's going home to Arizona. That's all we need to say. We can avoid any
Well, it's not home though. It's just his college state. Home is
Yeah.
Canada.
Montreal seems to be... I've never been to Montreal, but it seems like a much different place than Phoenix.
A little colder. Slash
wherever. Yeah.
Also, Thunder, ASU definitely has a I should stop just trying to save myself. They definitely have a Phoenix slash Scottsdale campus, but it's not the main one.
I think their journalism, not to get too inside journalism here, but I think their journalism school is in Phoenix.
Yeah, the Cronkite School.
Cronkite School, yeah. So
I don't know where ASU is, but I know the name of their journalism department.
Yeah, I mean, that tells you where we're... like where our heads are at, and I think that's appropriate considering the line of work, but yeah, no harm done.
Sorry, Sun Devils.
Wherever they are going, the Thunder has won 6 straight road games, which tied for second most in OKC history, and they've won 10 out of their last 11 on the road.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They've gotten very good on the road, and this is another opportunity to get a big win.
Yeah.
In the West.
So the Rockets lost tonight, and now we're not talking about just the 6th seed. The Thunder are now just one game back of the 5th seed. Dallas and Houston are both 29 and 18, the Thunder at 29 and 20. So those three teams are all tied in the win column. OKC just behind Dallas and Houston. By 2 games in the loss column. So creeping close to not just the 6th, but the 5th seed.
Yeah, no, it's a very packed Western Conference, which we expected, but we kind of expected it to be packed at the top. And instead you have the Lakers with 3.5 games on the Clippers. And then it's like the Clippers, the Nuggets, and the Jazz are all really close. You just went over in the middle. And then between the Thunder and the Grizzlies, there's a big old drop off.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies are 13 games back of the 1 seed, and the Thunder are 8.5.
Yeah, I think you can basically say, I mean, the Thunder is about as close to a lock as you could have right now. I mean, there's 7 teams in really good shape to make the playoffs, and then Memphis is leading that race for the 8 seed. San Antonio, Portland, Phoenix coming up just behind them. So really that, you know, as far as like the playoff hunt, we were like at the beginning of the year, oh, the Thunder, they might be in this thing. And now it looks like they're firmly in as of now. I mean, maybe things could change with the trade deadline coming up, but it seems like the suspense is going to be for the 8 seed and not necessarily for those 6 and 7 spots.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to put too much on Zion, which I 100% am right now. The Pelicans are right behind that pack that you just mentioned, and now they've got a whole new player who we've seen can score in bunches. We'll see how they continue to ease him back in and you know, put him onto this team. But it's
are you calling it now? Pelicans for the 8 seed?
No.
Oh man.
I am not. That would be fun. It would be so much fun to have Zion in the playoffs. But I just, as exciting as his debut was, I can't put that on a teenager who just came back from an injury that kept him out for months.
Yeah, if they would have just been a little bit better without him, this would look much more manageable, but they have won 2 in a row. They've definitely got a chance for that 8 seed. Instead, I'd be happy to see Memphis with as exciting as Ja Morant is.
Yeah.
Instead, we're probably going to get like San Antonio or something, like the most boring of the options and the most consistent. And it'll be of course, San Antonio made the playoffs.
They're pretty exciting against the Thunder. Generally.
Yeah. Too bad they can't set up like a 7-8 matchup.
Just completely redo how we do the postseason.
LaMarcus Aldridge will average like 44 points a game in that series.
Oh, 100%. Although they did much better last time that they played.
That's true. That's very true.
So yeah, Thunder headed into a game that is very winnable on paper.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at it now, all of these road games are winnable. They've suddenly become one of the best road teams in the NBA. But yeah,
you make a valid
point. This one against Phoenix is definitely winnable, and it's the last of the month of January, final day of January, and what's been a wild month. And now, after Friday, there will be a bit of a break.
The longest break.
Don't complain about the break again. I'm looking forward to this break.
All right, I'll just wrap it up instead. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Thanks everybody for tuning into this edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. Like it, love it, subscribe, share it, and we will see you on Friday after the Suns game.